T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Milwaukee, start your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, trucks, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show with Steve Zocchi, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, it's Final Inspection on 105.7 FM, The Fan. Here's Steve Zocchi.
And welcome into the Final Inspection Show. Jeff Orlowski filling in for Mr. Steve Zocchi. He's down at his second home, the Palatial Estates, down in Indianapolis, as they're getting ramped up for the Indy 500 next week. Obviously, Final Inspection Show brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Get out there. A little cloudy today, but I'm sure the cars are still on the track. Check their website, head out there, fun for the entire family. And of course, David Hobbs Honda on Green Bay Road in Glendale. Great sales going on. Get yourself a new or used car from David Hobbs. So I thought last week was crazy with the amount of news with NASCAR being for sale and everything like that, but this week is just as crazy. Stories everywhere. Before we get into that, quick rundown on today's show. We're going to be joined by Steve St. Clair. He's putting on the Arctic Cat All-Star Circuit of Champions tonight at Plymouth Dirt Track Racing. That's at the Sheboygan County Fairgrounds up in Plymouth. It's only an hour away. Tony Stewart's going to be out there. Ricky Abreu, Dave Blaney. Tons of huge, huge names. We talk all the time about how these dirt tracks are closing down and they don't have the support that they need. You can't get a better crop of drivers that's going to be out in Plymouth tonight. Get out there. Tickets are only $28, and I want to say it's $8 for a child seat. So to bring a kid there is only $8, and I think it's 11 and under. So it's a fantastic deal. Get out there. Support your local dirt tracks. And I also interviewed earlier this week Bill Weinaug. He's the promotions guy out at Plymouth Dirt Track Racing. That's been posted on the Final Inspection Facebook page. Make sure to check us out on Facebook. Just search TFI and you will find us. We can't run it today because it's a jam-packed show. So we've got Steve St. Clair. He's putting on the Arctic Cat All-Star Circuit of Champions tonight in in Plymouth at the Sheboygan Fairgrounds. We're going to hear from Tony DeZeno. Me and Steve both sat down with Tony earlier in the week, get all his thoughts from Indy. And Steve Zocchi, he's going to join us from Indianapolis yet again. He's going to be a guest on his own show. The thrill of his lifetime, I'm sure. And then we'll close out the show with Dennis Michelson and Lori Monroe from Race Talk Radio talking all things NASCAR as well. So NASCAR at Kansas last week. Stop me if you heard this before. Kevin Harvick wins the race yet again. Martin Truex, he ran strong. He only led about 13 laps in that race. But due to late pit strategy, he almost stole a victory at Kansas. Harvick passed him on the last lap to take the win, but that was a good showing for Truex. Logano, Kyle Larson, and Denny Hamlin round out your top five. Some notable names in the top 10, though. Paul Menard, he finished that race in sixth place. Eric Jones in seventh. Kurt Busch eighth. Amarola ninth. Kyle Busch, that rounds out your top 10. But yet again, another week, another victory for the four car. Obviously, this week is the All-Star race at Charlotte, and the weather hasn't been too friendly down there for the NASCAR guys. They ended up adding happy hour this morning, and Kyle Larson, he was the fastest in happy hour, and there was three of the Stewart Haas cars were all in the top five, Harvick, Bowyer, and Almirola, and Kurt Busch, I want to say he was like seventh or eighth. So you had all four of the Stewart Haas Fords in the top eight fastest in happy hour today. Obviously, that bodes well for them in the All-Star race tonight. But the biggest story of the All-Star to me, and to, I would imagine, a great majority of people here in Wisconsin, Matt Kenseth parks it on the pole for tonight's race. What a difference a week makes. Matt Kenseth, you know, he made his return at Kansas last week where he came in 36th out of 38 drivers. And he was not happy with anything with his, you know, related to his car and everything like that last week. Matt was not a happy camper. But what a difference a week makes. Now he's on the pole. And Ricky Stenhouse, his teammate, is sharing the front row. So, you know, a nice welcome back would be a cool $1 million going to Matt Kenseth. So congratulations to him and his team. That's fantastic, especially, like I said, considering that horrendous race and finish that they had in Kansas. More stories going on. NASCAR changed it now where teams will not have to start the race on the tires that they qualified on. Obviously, that helps the teams that that do make qualifying runs. So teams that don't can't sit there and have an unfair advantage at the start of the race. So that's good news for the teams that, you know, kind of follow the rules and get through spec. And don't sit there and get caught up and can't get their car through inspection. And then they start with fresh tires while the guys that do get through inspection have to sit there and start with, you know, tires that have 10 or however many laps that they ran on them. So that's a big change. I think that's one of those rule changes mid-season that NASCAR takes a lot of flack for. You know, they do this every year where they change the rules, but this is one that, you know, I would think it would be, you would be hard pressed to kind of come up with excuses why this is not a good idea. You know, you want to obviously reward the teams that make qualifying. You want to reward the teams that can get through inspection with a legal car and aren't sitting there and trying to press everything to the absolute limit. So I think that is a good rule change. Now, some more news coming out of the Xfinity series. Kaz Grala, he was fired from his team. And then I think 2 days later, he's back in. He's got four races that he's going to be running for the Fury race car team, which is owned by Tony Urie Jr., is part owner in that team. So Kaz Grala was out of the series, and then he was right back in. So a pretty crazy couple of days for him. Now, obviously, we had the truck race last night. Johnny Sauter, he picks up his third win of the season. You know, that it was an okay race. I'm not going to lie to you and tell you it was thrilling, but I've seen worse. But, you know, much congratulations to Johnny Sauter. That was a fantastic finish for him. And, you know, obviously just an aged veteran. He's been around forever. And with all the talk, you know, at the cup level about how the young guns and everything like that, this was going to be the year for the young guns. And, you know, you have Harvick, who's got a handful of wins. And right behind him is Kyle Busch with a little smaller handful of wins. And it's the old guys dominating in the Cup Series. And it looks like it's the old guys so far dominating in the trucks as well. Kyle Busch, he did start that race, and he ends up bringing the truck home second. He did have two pit road penalties that he had to overcome. I hope you I hope you heard his post-race comments about his car. I would love to play him. I'd have to do a little editing. He did drop a four-letter word that I can't play over the airwaves, but he wasn't thrilled. And the reporter asked him how he was able, with the two pit road penalties, to still manage a second-place finish, and basically his answer was pure talent. His pit crew did nothing to help him all day long. His car drove like a poop emoji, and you know, he was complaining about the splitter and how awful that is and everything like that. And obviously Kyle, he'll tell you what's on his mind. He also spoke out about the fact that for the All-Star race tonight, NASCAR, the Cup guys are running restrictor plates, and whether that's good or not. And I'll tell you, I was watching practice yesterday, and the cars, man, they look slow. They look slow. We'll see how this goes, but I'm not a big fan. But you know, hopefully they know something I don't, and the race tonight is just going to blow our minds. And so we'll see. I'm trying to stay positive on this one. The All-Star race is one of those races that I don't really look forward to. I watch every lap of NASCAR every year, and obviously I have my favorite tracks like Richmond and Phoenix and Bristol and you know, and those. Charlotte is nowhere near my top 15, but hopefully it's some good racing. So we'll see. So what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick break here. I'm going to get Steve St. Clair on the line. He's the one that's putting together tonight's race up in Plymouth at the Sheboygan County Fairgrounds. It's the Arctic Cat All-Star Circuit of Champions. That is tonight. They start racing at 5:30. Now, guys, you know, like I said at the start of the show, we always complain about how the dirt tracks aren't getting the support they need. Now is your chance. Okay, I searched, because I'm going up there tonight, and I searched. It is a 1-hour and 5-minute drive from my house to get up there. That's it. So is it going to take me 1 hour and 5? No, because I drive fast, so it'll probably take me, you know, 50 minutes. But it's 1 hour away. There's no excuses. If you're not going to Great Lakes Dragway today, which would be another fantastic idea in Union Grove, and if you're not buying a Honda from David Hobbs, get in your car and get up to Plymouth and see the Arctic Cat All-Star Circuit of Champions. I will stop preaching now. We'll go to a quick commercial break, and we'll have Steve St. Clair coming up next. This is the Final Inspection Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway and David Hobbs Honda.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove and David Hobbs Honda. Joining me on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, Steve St. Clair. He's the man responsible for putting together the All-Star Circuit, a champion show tonight out at Sheboygan County Fairgrounds, Plymouth Dirt Track Racing. Steve, how you doing today?
Doing excellent, thank you.
Yeah, one heck of a lineup that that you were able to put together tonight. I know that the on-track action starts at 5:30 today. Only $28 to get in. If you're bringing a child, it's only $6. $6 for kids. It's a great deal for the whole family. Why don't you tell us how you got this all put together there, Steve?
All right, well, I'm also the president of the Bumper to Bumper IRA Outlaw Sprint Car Series. And in the 410 sprint car world, we're blessed to have pretty much the same rule package across the country. So Tony Stewart owns the All-Star Circuit of Champions. They're in the same rule package we are. It's a great co-sanctioned opportunity. So we'll have the local guys from Wisconsin trying to defend their home turf against travelers such as Tony Stewart and Rico Abreu and Chad Kemena and Dave Blaney, a former World of Outlaw champion and NASCAR driver. His son is Ryan Blaney. So, we're going to have 50 of the best here tonight going after $5,000 to win.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And Rico Abreu, Blaney, Stewart, you know, just a star-studded field. I can't wait. I'm heading up there tonight. Cannot wait for it. Now, I know that the track up at Plymouth is a 1/3 mile dirt track. How's the lines looking for racing? Is it good to be, close to the bottom? Is it good to run up high? How you think the race is going to play out?
I'm hoping they're everywhere. That's what we want. We're going to try our best to make it at least, a couple grooves. You know, the top's obviously a longer way around, but they like getting up in that loose stuff up there and keeping their momentum up. So they'll be everywhere, and the good guys go where the other guys aren't. You know what I mean? They're going down the straightaway. If the guy ahead of them's high, they're going low, and vice versa. The idea is not to break your momentum. And, it should be good. We got some guys wanting to defend their home turf, too. You know, Hell Baylog is probably the most popular Wisconsin sprint car racer, but we've got Scotty Thiel and Jeremy Schultz and Scotty Neitzel and Wayne Majeski out of Milwaukee area. There's a bunch. So it's a pretty neat deal. We're all racing on the track at the same time, but there's a bunch of pride here, too. And, we're trying to defend our home turf the best we can. Those guys have a little bit, more experience than we do, but I think we'll show well, I think.
Yeah, we had Bill Baylog on the show last year, and fantastic guy, so easy to root for, and I'm sure most of our listeners will all be cheering for the Wisconsin faithful instead of the out-of-towners that are coming in. So what is it like having Tony Stewart at one of these events? Does it just bring an increased level of craziness to the track? More obviously, I'm sure the excitement and the level that, all the guys that are going up against him, put a little extra oomph trying to get by him and race him hard and all that kind of stuff. But overall, what's it like having Tony at one of these events?
I've had him at a few now, and I think, throughout his career, he understands the business. He owns Eldora Speedway, in Ohio, and he's got his hands in a few others. He understands it. So it's a big deal for all the tracks that have him. Sometimes he'll just show up in arrangements like this. We have an arrangement where we can use his name and advertise him, and it definitely brings more people. There's no doubt about it. Even though it's a dirt race, a lot of, past NASCAR fans, pavement people show up, and it just helps the crowd. It makes a great atmosphere. Tony will have his apparel trailer, so will Rico. We'll have ours. The All-Stars will have theirs. So you got like a little atmosphere going behind the grandstands. And he gets it. So he's been very gracious. If things are going well at the end of the night, he typically sticks around and he'll sign an autograph to the last person's gone. He's been really good about that. Doesn't want to be bothered too much when he's focusing on the racing, but afterwards, he's been wonderful to deal with, and he owns the series here, and it's a pretty neat deal too. They have an 8-race TV package with MAP TV, and 3 of the 8 are co-sanctioned with us. And tonight's the first time for this TV package, so it's just being taped. But it's pretty cool having the Lucas Oil production crew here, and the All-Star rig was here yesterday, and we're already getting all set up. The track looks great. That little bit of rain we got last night actually helped. It's a good thing for a dirt track.
Good.
So we're good. It's a little cloudy and overcast, and the track's going to stay nice. And but my understanding is we're good to go. We're good to go.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And like you said, having MAV TV there, and even though, it's not going to air for a month or two, that's still fantastic and be great exposure, A, for you and your series and the track and just, dirt racing in Wisconsin in general. It's a win-win. And then I know tomorrow, aren't you guys together again in Sun Prairie?
Same show tomorrow at Sun Prairie. there's a lot of, you know, Sun Prairie's got a lot of history. And we were there last year with the All-Stars, too, and we actually rained out in the middle of qualifying on the very same day. And tomorrow is Tony's birthday. So it's the Tony Stewart birthday bash at Sun Prairie tomorrow. And, you know, as good as tonight's going to be, there'll even be more cars tomorrow because you'll pick up some cars out of Knoxville Raceway. Knoxville races on Saturday nights. So I would expect to see Kerry Madsen and Brooke Tatnell, a couple of Australians that reside in the Knoxville area over the summer months. They'll be here, and I look for maybe Terry McCarl and some other big guns. So there's going to be plenty of talent in Wisconsin in the next 2 days, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's fantastic. How are ticket sales going for tonight up in Plymouth? Are you guys almost sold out?
Oh, well, you know, dirt tracks around here, typically we don't, pre-sales aren't a real big deal, but we've exceeded my expectations, but there's still plenty of seats. So there's plenty of general admission, so anybody that comes will definitely have a place to watch from, no doubt.
Great. That's fantastic. So on-track action starts around 5:30 today. If you want to reserve your tickets, call 920-893-5751. 920-893-5751. If you want to buy your tickets before you head out there, but make sure you head out there. If I don't see you, I'm going to come after you, and you guys all know who I'm talking about. So, Steve St. Clair, I want to thank you so much for joining me, and, you know, what a fantastic event. You're doing a fantastic job. I can't wait to see you today and hopefully tomorrow out in Sun Prairie.
Very good, very good. There's already rigs pulling in here, so, yeah, it's going to be a big night. So, yeah, we're going to fire motors up at 5:30, and then we qualify, and I don't like being specific on a race time because it's a dirt track, and I just want to keep going. So, hot laps, qualifying, and we're going racing.
Fantastic. Well, Steve, thank you so much, and I'll see you tonight.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care. That's Steve St. Clair on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. If you're looking for a simple and convenient pre-approval process for your new home, construction, or renovation loan, call Great Midwest Bank, committed to providing uniquely tailored common-sense mortgage products since 1935. And speaking of 1935, when we come back from this short break, Steve Zocchi is going to join us. I don't know if he was born in 35, but, you know, he's got a ton of racing knowledge from back then. So Steve is going to be a guest on his own show. Coming up next, this is the Final Inspection Racing Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway and David Hobbs Honda. Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove and David Hobbs Honda. And joining me on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline from his palatial estates in Indianapolis, it's the man, Mr. Steve Zocchi. Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing excellent. How about you, sir?
Oh, living the dream, man. Living the dream. The studio's not the same without you in here, buddy. So, I'm sure you saw, you know, the big news for me in NASCAR was our buddy Matt Kenseth parks it on the pole for the All-Star race tonight in Charlotte. What a difference a week makes, because, God, he was awful at Kansas. A 36th yeah. place finish. Nothing went right for Kenseth at Kansas. Kenseth at Kansas. Easy for me to say. But just one short week later, now he's the man to beat. What's your thoughts on Kenseth starting P1?
Well, he admitted, you know, Kansas was just a mess to begin with. They had issues with inspection. And we've heard this from other teams in that. When you're fast off the truck, it really puts you ahead of things because then you're just working on your setups and tweaking. When you're behind, you know, when you fail inspection three times like they did, you're losing track time, you're losing all sorts of time for preparation, and that's really hard to come back from. And then plus, being out of a car for 6 months doesn't help. So, I mean, I think he knew from the get-go that you know, this wasn't going to be a good weekend. But it was interesting, you know, listening to what he had to say about the cars and the issues Roush has been having. He did some testing in that, and did, you know, they worked on the cars, and him and he basically said the same thing that Stenhouse had been saying, the issues they've been having with the cars. So here's Ricky Stenhouse going, you know, hey, these cars are doing this, this, this. We need to work on this. And everybody in the team is like, yeah, well, okay. Well, Kenseth comes aboard, and he says the same thing, and that kind of bonded the two, kind of like saying, okay, now we got a second opinion. Now the team's kind of going, oh, okay, well, let's make these changes. But now if you're Jack Roush and the team, I mean, that does, you know, we've said we love Trevor Bayne as a person and everything, but this does not bode well for his career, does it?
No, it doesn't. And, you know, I didn't know how to take what Ricky Stenhouse said because, you know, I was kind of on the fence. Is that one of those things where Ricky's trying to pat himself on the back saying, oh, see, I told you so. Or is this one of those things where Kenza starts saying them and now Ricky's like, oh, yeah, I told you guys that. You know, so I don't know. But, you know, we both agreed that, you know, nothing bad is going to happen by getting Kenseth into these Roush cars. It's only going to help that team get better. And, you know, I think that at least after 1 week, they realize that they've got a lot more problems than perhaps having Trevor Bayne as the driver.
Right. And, you know, we've seen Ricky Stenhouse be successful in that car and put that car up front in certain situations. Problem with the Roush team is that they're only fast at certain tracks and they've slipped behind the other four teams of Penske and Stewart Haas. So, you know, we know with Trevor Bayne, he hasn't looked good, you know, in a couple of years, basically. He's had a couple top 10 finishes over the last couple of years, but, you know, between him and Stenhouse is easily the number one driver. So it'll be interesting to see, having Kenseth in the car, you know, what they do tonight, but, you know, what he can do at the other races, and if there's a sizable or noticeable difference between the two, which I think you will, well, what do you do for 2019? You know, the name of the game is sponsorship, and if Roush is committed to improving that team and Ford has a good package, you know, for racing, it's going to be a heck of a lot easier selling sponsorship with Matt Kenseth as your driver than it is with Trevor Bayne.
Yeah, and I don't think that there's any way that you could doubt the package that Ford is bringing to the table when you look at the success from Stewart Haas, and then you look at the recent success from Penske also.
Right.
You know, they can't hide behind the fact that, oh, well, this is a down year for Ford because they're dominating. You know, at happy hour today, all four Stewart Haas cars were in the top eight speed-wise.
Yeah.
You know, so they've got a lot of catching up to do, and they better get to it. Now, obviously, you're at your palatial estate. Some call it a second mansion. I call it your first home in Indianapolis. What's the latest going on down in Indy?
Well, we got, I think it was 8 or 10 cars qualified, and then it started to rain, which, you know, there's a song, it never rains in Indianapolis during the summer. And it's basically been summer here since the beginning of May. This is one of the hottest Mays they have had, you know, and it's a record high. I mean, they hit 80 degrees, something like 10 days in a row or something here. And yesterday it was only like 78. Today it's in the mid-70s, and the sun is out now, but we had a shower, I guess you could call it, where it rained for about 15, 20 minutes or so. They lost the track. And if you can hear in the background, the jet blowers are on the track. They're drying the track. They're going to put the cars out at the top of the hour, 1 o'clock. And then at 1:30, qualifying is going to resume.
Yeah, and with today being bump day, you know, do you see any upsets as far as who misses the race, or you think it'll just kind of
Well, we had a situation earlier with Oriel Servia came out. He's been fast all month, and it looks like he just missed one of the corners. Now, he said something broke on the car, and you don't know if that's a situation where he's just saying that and he just screwed up or what, but he basically called off the attempt because the way qualifying is now, you can do that. And he did not take a time, I don't believe, and then he's just going to go out again in the afternoon. But, I mean, he was hitting, he was in the low 223s, which people are speculating that's what it's going to take to get into the race. So he didn't want to put himself in that situation. But the speculation of the two cars, well, yesterday they were saying, oh, James Davison might be out, but he had a heavy wreck coming out of turn two, or in turn two, ending up in the back straightaway. But the key was out in practice today. They worked the AJ Foyt and Bilardi Racing, who's based in Wisconsin, worked all night long, got the car back on track, and he was actually running in the 223s again right out of the garage. So it was good to see him back on track. Pippa Mann, they've been mentioning. Pippa Mann's been in the 221s, I think it was, and she's been kind of struggling with some speed. And that could be a situation where, you know, she just does Indy at this point, and she hadn't been in a car, and maybe they were just dialing in a lot of downforce. Now, with this new package, though, I've been hearing that it's not as easy to dial out the downforce or, you know, suck up the car as it used to be. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. It's going to be tight, to say the least. So if I'm a betting man, which two cars might not make it? I think one of them might be Pippa, even though she's a good story. She's made the last six or so 500s. But the other one, I don't know. It could be, you know, it could be a full-time driver, you know, a driver that follows the series full-time. It'll be interesting to see what happens, though.
Yeah, it's hard to root against the full-time guys on a race like this, but I think it would add another huge storyline to, you know, obviously all the pomp, circumstance, and legend of the Indy 500. And like you said, with Pippa and those couple other guys running at 223, Spencer Pigot tweeted out today, solid first run for his car at 228. So they're about 5 miles slower than the pig.
Yeah, the Ed Carpenter Racing's got a good package here, and they've been fast all month. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with them and with Danica too. So
yeah, how's she been running this weekend?
She's been running fine. I don't think there's I don't foresee a situation where she misses a race, especially with, you know, that race team she's with. They're a full-time team. Ed Carpenter, though, only races the ovals, but they definitely do put an emphasis on this race. I mean, you know, he's the last guy born in Speedway, the race here at the track, and, you know, he still makes a home here. And, you know, this is his home race, and it would be kind of neat seeing him win the race.
That would be an utter disaster for IndyCar if Danica missed a race, wouldn't it?
It would make a lot of speculation. I mean, it would be a big – it would definitely – it's interesting to see. You would have a lot of people who would say, yeah, she didn't deserve to make the race, but, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, okay, utter disaster is too strong because, obviously, you know, it's one of the iconic races. It's must-see TV, you know, no matter what. You know, it could be me and you running out there, and I would, you know, I would set my DVR.
Don't forget, Team Penske missed this race in 1995, and it was still sold out, so.
Well, yeah, good point. So, utter disaster, no, but I think that would be – I think if she missed a race, that would be – one of those stories that you don't want where the main story is about stuff off the track and not the guys on the track.
Well, it'd be up there with Bobby Rahal missing the race in 94, Team Penske missing the race in 95. You know, we mentioned with Tony and that we taped earlier, about Ryan Hunter Ray missing the race in 2011. Then he had to come back with a Foyt car when they bought out Bruno Junqueira. So, I mean, you know, sometimes the storyline is who misses the race.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, can you hang on for another segment on your own show, Steve?
I certainly can.
All right, fantastic. We're going to take a quick break right now, and when we come back, there'll be more of the man, the legend, that is Steve Zocchi. This is the Final Inspection Show, Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway and David Hobbs Honda.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi.
Presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove.
On 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. And, of course, David Hobbs Honda in Glendale. Welcome back, Steve Zocchi, the man, the myth, the legend. Welcome back to your own show yet again, Steve.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I figure I could squeeze you in here on your own show. You know what I mean? So some news coming out of IndyCar this week that some changes to their engine next season. What's the latest on that?
Actually, they announced it this morning, and that was starting in 2021, I'm still not used to saying that there's going to be a new engine formula in IndyCar that's going to be a twin turbocharged V6 engine, which will be a 2.4 liter variant. Right now they got a 2.2 liter, and it's going to be capable of more than 900 horsepower, which the drivers have been saying that they needed a little more horsepower than what they have now. And the engines will continue to turn at a maximum 12,000 RPM. And testing on that's going to start in the summer of 2020. And the big news about this is, of course, Honda and Chevy are both in agreement with this, but they're also looking for a third manufacturer to join the series. So it'll be interesting to see if there is a third manufacturer. I think with the momentum that IndyCar has had over the last few years, I think that's a good possibility. It just remains to see who that will be. I know they've been coveting Ford for a couple of years, and Ford has been hem-hawing. There's not sure why, but there's a reason why Ford just has not embraced the IndyCar series. I think that might date back to the old Champ Car IRL wars. But there could be any a number. One of the manufacturers always been rumored is Hyundai, but it could be a Japanese manufacturer. Who knows? Whether it's Chrysler or Alfa Romeo has been rumored too. So it'll be interesting to see. But I think three manufacturers in the series would be perfect. That's what the IndyCar series needs for that. Achieve that next level.
Yeah, I agree. The more, another manufacturer would be huge for the series. How do I get one of those engines into my minivan?
Well, that's the thing, with this new lead, with this new configuration, they both said, we like this formula. We want to stick with because they worked with IndyCar. It's not like IndyCar just said, hey, we're going to do this, engine. This was with consulting with Honda and Chevrolet, and this is a configuration that passes. They can use some of this technology with the cars that they're running today. So,
yeah, I would love to have 900 horses.
Well, that's one advantage they have over NASCAR, some of these other series, including IMSA, is there's not a lot of technology that's going, between the track to the road, and actually some to the road to the track.
Yeah, that's true. Let's see, we got 6 minutes until we got to take a break here, Steve. What are we forgetting about down there?
Well, I'm on the fourth floor of the media center, and there's a little walkway around, which I've always enjoyed. because you're looking down at everybody. It's a great place to people watch. It's quiet, and one of the cool things I noticed that they have one of the air pylons, you know, those pylons that they had for the Red Bull air racing events that they have here in October or late September, and that baby is about five stories high, and they got one of the planes sitting in front of it. So if you come down to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and go, it's right off Holman Boulevard in the infield. You can't miss it. I mean, if you're in the infield, you'll be able to see it. But it's kind of neat. It's neat. It's, you know, when you see it in person, it's like, wow, that's pretty cool to see the planes.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. What is that, your fan club honking at you?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, there are people waving and, you know.
Well, having that perpetual red carpet lead you everywhere probably gives you away.
Yeah, there's people looking at me staring, and I don't know. Maybe it's my lazy eye. I'm not sure.
When are you doing your book signing? Is that this weekend?
The David Hobbs book signing is coming up next weekend. I'll be actually with David at the museum on Thursday. There's a book signing there. The IMS Museum is having a book signing with David Hobbs, Hurley Haywood, and Wally Dallenbach will be there. Wally Dallenbach just had a book done by Gordon Kirby, who's here, who has gone through some recent health issues, but it's good to see him back on his feet. And Gordon Kirby's done a lot of books in the past, and it's good to see him. He did that Andretti book a few years ago and an Unser book, and they'll be signing in the afternoon on Thursday at the museum from, I believe it's 1 to 3 p.m. And then also on Saturday, make sure you come out to, if you're going to be in the area, come down to the Speedway. My wife and I, along with Mr. Hobbs, will be at the Pagoda Plaza for probably the best memorabilia show in the Midwest, if not in the country. Lots of vendors will be there, and it is a neat, you're going to see stuff there that you don't see at other places, and a lot of stuff for sale, and it's a lot of fun. And not only that, at the same time, there's also going to be two autograph sessions with what they call the legends of the Indy 500, and Mr. Hobbs will be at autograph session number two. But a lot of drivers in the past will be there, and it's, you know, some of it's like local drivers like Jimmy Kite and Johnny Parsons, and those guys are usually there. But also you get some other drivers, like in the past the Whittington brothers, which are, if you're a fan of IMSA racing and known of racing in the past, the Whittingtons were certainly an interesting two brothers, Don and Bill. They were out there, but Indy 500 winners will also be doing a separate autograph session. That's for like Mario, Rick Mears, Bobby Unser, Al Unser Jr. So it should be a lot of fun. It's so much to do on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday before the race. And then, of course, also the races on Sunday.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. And if for some reason you cannot get down to Indianapolis, you can see all this kind of stuff. Steve does a fantastic job across all aspects of social media. Make sure you follow the Final Inspection on Facebook, just at the Final Inspection. You can search TFI. You cannot miss it. If you go on Twitter, it's at SFI1250. Just search for that. You'll find us. Fantastic photos, info, stories, just amazing stuff gets on there all the time. And if you get tired of racing, you know, heaven forbid, and you need an hour break, you can check out this lovely podcast, Steve. It's on 1057FMTheFan.com. If you go under the producers tab, you can find Green and Gold Then and Now. Why don't you tell us about this fantastic adventure?
Oh, that sounds like an intriguing title for a podcast.
Absolutely.
If you're a Packers fan, it's a podcast Jeff and I started out. But it's not only current news. We also do a little bit on the history of the Packers, too. This first podcast we did, we reviewed the draft and all the draft picks and that, but also some of the Packer drafts in the past that might not have gone as well. So I think it's a interesting kind of take on things. And you know, we kid with a lot of the younger, well, producers and on-air talent at the station that, you know, for these guys, the Packers have always been good for.
Yep.
But, you know, for the older guys at the station, like Tim Allen and myself and Chuck Friedman and that, we're all basically in the same age bracket. There is our childhood was littered with Packer losses, bad trades, just awful draft picks, and horrible losses. And it's fun with Brett Favre and everything, but I think the true Packer fans are the ones that endured David Whitehurst and Jim Hadel and Dieter Brock and some of those guys. Vince Ferragamo for a year, and of course, Randy Wright.
Of course. Now, we only got 30 seconds left before we got to get out of here, Steve. Give me your pick. Who wins the poll for the Indy 500?
My pick, the chalk pick is Will Power, although my wild and crazy pick would be Tony Kanaan or Marco Andretti. Watch out for those two. And then for tonight, I got to do it. Matt Kenseth. Why not?
Absolutely. All right. So Kanaan on the pole, Kenseth for tonight. I'm taking Chalk and Will Power. I'm taking Daniel Suarez tonight. I think he's going to shock the world and win a cool million. Steve, thank you so much for coming on your own show, buddy. Have a great time down at Indy.
Thanks for having me, and we're going to have cars in the track here in a little bit.
Beautiful.
Milwaukee. Start your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, trucks, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show with Steve Zocchi, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, it's Final Inspection on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Hey, welcome back to the Final Inspection Show. It's Steve Zocchi along with Jeff Orlowski, and joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, it is Tony DeZino. Tony, welcome to the show.
Hello, guys. Good to be back with you. It's been too long, to be honest.
It's been about a month, I guess, but for those who are wondering, we are, full disclosure, we are pre-taping this because I will be chatting live on the show from Indianapolis, or I may have already, depending where Jeff decides to insert this clip. So
we got Tony in Indianapolis, we got Steve who's going to be in Indianapolis, and I am the sorry sap that gets stuck here.
Oh,
so thank you guys. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Stuck in Milwaukee, J.O. This is not cool. You need to be down here with having fun with us.
Well, hopefully next year, brother. Hopefully next
year. Yeah, that would be really cool, especially last week where it was 85 degrees down in Indianapolis and about lucky to be 40 here. That was very nice.
That was painful.
So we have pole qualifying. It's really starting to, now the racing season. We were like in second gear going into third. Now we're going up to fourth gear here with qualifying. Well, with the Indianapolis Grand Prix last week, we got qualifying this weekend. And then already it's going to be the Indianapolis 500 next week, along with the World 600, and then we're in the summer. It's going to be June, so it's really starting to speed up, isn't it, Tony?
I am more excited. It's like once you get to May, it's basically Christmas for racing fans because you got all the NASCAR stuff. You got Indy 500 coverage all month between that and IndyCar Grand Prix. You got F1 in Monaco at the tail end of the month. I mean, there's such a palpable excitement that takes the initial 3-4 races of the year, and then it's like, okay, this is when it really gets fun now. So, and it's not that the IndyCar Grand Prix isn't fun, but it's like, okay, a proper bump day comes back, and we have no idea who's going to make it, and we've got 35 cars, and there's no wankers in 35 cars. So, it's exciting stuff to be thinking about for sure.
What's the possibility if we hit 36? I mean, is there a possibility somebody brings out another car, or is because of the engine lease programs everything's too tight to take, you know, carry that out?
I don't want to say zero, but I mean, it's a very slim chance because essentially where you're at is so many of these Indy only entrants have Indy only crews. and you don't want to just, you know, throw a car together and then worry about a crew later type thing. A lot of times you're going to need to see mid to high six figures necessarily is what puts together an extra Indy 500 only program. And even though there's been drivers with budget, the challenge is if they're a rookie, they need to complete rookie orientation program, which the session for that happened earlier this week. We had a situation at Dale Coyne where Zachary Clamadomillo got called out of the bullpen to replace Pietro Fittipaldi. So he was able to do it, but like if any other rookies would do it, they wouldn't be available. If there's any veterans available, they might have other commitments. So, you know, asking for 36, it would have needed to materialize probably 3-4 weeks ago if it was going to be realistic. And Chevrolet is really the only engine manufacturer with capacity to do that because they have 16 cars, whereas Honda has 19, which is one more than what they've usually had for the last few years when they've had 18.
Well, let's say we have let's have some fun here. Let's say there's a manufacturer, whether it be Chevrolet or Honda, that has the two cars on the outside looking in, and let's say another car is maybe crashed on the same team, same manufacturer, I should say. Could that be a situation where they're saying, well, we don't want to be short, you know, two cars or three cars or whatever. And they have the means or a decent backup car to put in there. I mean, could that be a scenario that could possibly happen?
Depends on the driver that's available. I mean, Honda's worst case scenario is two Hondas are going to be bumped out, and there's 17 Hondas and 16 Chevrolets. The best case scenario for Honda is there's 19 Hondas and 14 Chevrolets. So either way, Honda will have an edge in terms of car count when we get to May. 27th for race day. However, if there was, like, say, a Chevrolet guy that needed to be put in, you know, somebody becomes available or a veteran driver is needed, say someone gets, you don't want to ask for this, but say someone gets injured, then you're running a twofold risk where it's like you don't want to have a situation where your car is out of the show if there's an incident. But the problem is you're up against the clock on Saturday because it's bump day qualifying on Saturday as opposed to Sunday. So if you have an incident or a mechanical issue, there's very little relapse or very little time to recover if you can do it. Kind of the way the nature of the schedule is set up, it's not as easy to plug and play a replacement driver if the replacement driver was available for Sunday as opposed to Saturday. So I'd love to see an extra one, but I'm not going to be disappointed that there's two more. I think it's good that there's two more, though, because if there was only one more, then you kind of have this awkward, well, could we start 34th? But with 35, it's like, okay, there's 35. If you're not in 33, then get out. So, I mean, that's kind of a pretty straightforward way of how it's going to go.
I got one more scenario to throw out, yeah. How about it's 19... It's 1997 again. Let's say they bump out the two, and at 6 o'clock, 6:05 on Sunday night, there's 33 cars. But then on Monday afternoon, they announced the two cars that got bumped. We're actually going to let them start.
I highly don't see that happening. Okay. However, there's going to be one or two. Like I worry about, say Danica Patrick's on the outside looking in. Then you have a nightmare scenario where your whole big situation or your championship defender or your 500 winner. I mean, there is a fail-safe mechanism for a force majeure to have a guy or gal qualify the next day if they're not able to, or not next day, sorry, out of the next initial session. However, it's a case where, you know, I go back to the last proper bump day, which is in 2011, and you had 40 cars going for 33 spots. If you didn't make it, you were screwed, except if you were Ryan Hunter Ray and you decided to buy your way back in because that's what the sponsor wanted. So, I don't know. I mean, it's really interesting because of the 35 cars, there's not like one or two that you look at and be like, oh, they're completely vulnerable, because they're all quality entrants. That's what makes this year so difficult to prognosticate in terms of who gets on the outside looking in.
Interesting. As we go into qualifying, who's our favorite? Who's our front row prediction, let's say? Is it going to be a Team Penske? Is it going to be Honda's? Is it?
Man, it's been really hard to gauge this week in practice because the no-toe speeds at the early part of the week were down a bit. They were only in the 221 to 223 range. The way the new universal aero kit has worked is that it's basically all cars have the same spec. There's not as much room to trim out as there was in the previous car. So we haven't really had a chance to see who can really showcase what they're able to do. Penske's not qualified particularly well here the last couple of years. They've struggled to get cars in the Fast 9. Ganassi's been the same way. I mean, yeah, they were pole last year with Scott Dixon. However, they've been really struggling in their single car runs. So they were only mid to low 20s on Saturday. A guy that I always look at as a good pole threat is Ed Carpenter. He's been really strong both with the spec kit, Dallara DW12 that they had previously. They won back-to-back poles here in 13 and 14. He was also really strong last year with the manufacturer kit when they qualified second. That's a guy that I could look at as a front row. I would be shocked if there's not at least one to two Penske's in the Fast 9. All four is a question mark. And Assi, with only two cars, they don't have the odds really in their favor. Andretti, meanwhile, with six cars, has a lot of guys they could put in. So, you know, if I was a betting man, I would say one Penske, one Carpenter, and one Andretti car in the front row.
All right. I'll put you on the spot. Can you name all the cars for Andretti?
Oh, I can go all day, Zocchi.
I love it.
We got our two past Indy 500 champs in Ryan Underay and Alexander Rossi. We got Marco Andretti, who's their perpetual, I'm going to make it, but then I'm not going to win the race type deal. And, you know, is this Marco's years, like spring in Wisconsin, where, you know, like every year there's a Marco story. You got Zach Veach, who is in the 26 car that looks a lot like Carlos Munoz's old car from his rookie year. It's got a striking yellow and orange paint scheme this month that is a little different from what they've had for the year. Zach's a good kid. I know a friend of the show, he's been on a few times. I don't see him as a Fast 9 contender necessarily, but he'll be okay. Then you got your two wild cards, which is Stephen Wilson, back after a year's hiatus. Opportunity of a career for him, you know, in a fifth Andretti Autosport car. And then Carlos Munoz, the dude who, like, sneaks up and all of a sudden he's, like, second with five laps to go. And you're like, where did he come from? And Munoz is a sixth Andretti Autosport car. So I think I passed the test on that.
Yes, you did. Very good. Danica. You know, let's chat, and Jeff, feel free to pine in. I think it's great. You know, come on in, race, last race. I think it's fine. And so far now, granted, you know, it's still a lot of TV to go yet, but I don't think it's been too much. Have you?
No, pleasantly surprised by Danica, both in terms of the media attention she's gotten, but also the understanding of how different IndyCar is now compared to when she was here last 7 years ago. She knows it's a different game now. She's got a lot of good people on the team that she's with at Carpenter Racing. And I know I'm on record as saying I don't think she'll win, but I'll be honest, she's been impressive thus far in the practice week, because here's the thing with her. She's smart in racecraft. She knows how to bring it home in one piece. And if she's running fourth, fifth, whatever it is, 20 laps to go, if it becomes a fuel mileage race, Carpenter has nothing to lose by saying, hey, you know, dial it back, try to make this number, and you can make it home. So the catch with Danica is very simple. She winning the race would be excellent for her brand. It would be terrible for IndyCar, because it's like, you're somebody that hasn't driven one of your car in 7 years, waltzes up, drives a green 13, which is the, you know, bad luck du jour of race cars, and somebody that is just showing up your entire field. Same reason I didn't want Alonso to win last year. Same reason I didn't want Kurt Busch. Get your solid top four or five finish, you know, be like, I proved I can still hack it, but, you know, I'm not overshadowing the race. And I think with her, that's kind of the balancing act. And, you know, she's got a lot of similar people back. And I don't know. I mean, I rate her a lot higher than I'd rate Spencer Pigot in this race, for instance, one of her teammates, you know, because she knows how to race this event at the front. You know, Spencer, you know, a lot of talent in the Maserati Indy, but has never really been able to put a 500-mile race together yet. This is only his third one ever. Whereas Danica is somebody that knows how to run this race, and I think she's approaching it with the right mindset.
Now, real quick, Tony, because we got to get to break, but say Danica, you know, we go to Bizarro Land, hell freezes over. Say she wins the Indy 500, will she have a ride for every race the rest of the season?
No. I think it would be a very simple, I'd be a very simple deal where she could say, I won the race, I'm going to do my media tour, I'm going to do all the things that come with it. What it could do is it could prolong her career beyond this May, where it's like, oh, great, I've won the race now. Maybe I can come back and defend it. Maybe I can become a two-time winner. So I think you could see her back in Indy in subsequent years. However, I don't think that it would lead to anything in the rest of the full season. I don't think she'd want it, number one. And number two, I don't think it would behoove her as a brand to advance beyond that point.
We're talking to Tony DeZino on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk more Indianapolis qualifying with Tony DeZino on the Final Inspection Show. And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by Great Lakes Dragway. And David Hobbs Honda joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. It is Tony DeZino. And Tony, of course, you're down in Indianapolis, but you're working too, aren't you?
Yeah. So in the past, the Final Inspection listeners will have known my work with the NBC Sports website. I had a couple shifts in that over the offseason. I had an opportunity in the IMSA Sports Car Paddock, which is my primary role. And then for IndyCar, I'm working with Trackside Online, which is a subscription service, but it for $22 for the year. It is a smorgasbord of information and stats and insight from the IndyCar paddocks. And my colleague Steve Wooditch and I, and our other colleague Patrick Steffen, who's out in Colorado, we're at every event. And it's a good combination. And it's always a treat to be able to still do this, where to be on the IndyCar circuit. And so, that's a new thing for this year. But subscribe, and here we go.
It's one of the best buys in racing. Trackside Online, make sure you look them up. Tony, what's your first Indianapolis 500 qualifying memory?
So this is a really cool year for me, Z-Man, because we're in 2018, and the first Indy 500 I ever covered was in 2008. And I covered qualifying weekend that year, which is the first year I ever covered qualifying, which had bump day that year, which was Buddy Lazier and Roger Yasukawa and Max Pappas and Mario Dominguez had bump day that year.
Oh, yes.
The unification year.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were four or five extra cars going for four spots. So Phil Giebler, Tosa Panos on Saturday, he's done. Pappas never makes a qualifying attempt. Yasukawa is too slow. So it comes down to a two-on-one between Mario Dominguez and Buddy Lazier. Buddy Lazier's car had no pace all week. It was a late entry. They only got running Thursday or Friday. You know, Hemelgarn was kind of, you know, they used to be good in the IRL days, but in the merge series, they were kind of a one-off only entry. Lazier's like, I'm going to throw the wing back 3, 4, 5 degrees. It has no business making it work. He throws down to 218, you know. He gets in the field. Dominguez is running quicker on the first and second lap. He runs a quicker first lap, and then he bends it in turn one on the second lap, and he's done at that point. So I'm like, it was so – I'm standing on pit lane, and I'm watching Carol Azir and Buddy having an embrace, and, you know, it was really close. It was really nice to be close to Carol Azir and Buddy in that moment. So, you know, that kind of set the tone. I was like, in no other race can qualifying 32nd be this awesome. But it was that.
It was cool.
The other bump day memory, just real quick, was in 2011. So I graduated from Marquette University in the morning, but I'm still in my college apartment, and my college apartment has Versus, so I'm able to watch bump day qualifying. And of course, that was the last proper bump day. There's 40 cars going for 33 spots, and to this day, I will forever be grateful that I saw on TV Alex Lloyd. Friggin' Pink Lloyd, Dale Coyne has no business being in the show. Not for any of his fault or the crew's fault. They just couldn't find it. Lloyd bumps out one of the Andretti cars, and it leaves them
Ryan Hunter Ray
awkward position where it's like, oh no, Hunter Ray and Marco are in this like joint. Oh crap, we're both on the outside looking in type thing. And Marco then finally comes back and bumps Hunter Ray out, which leaves Hunter Ray like, oh my gosh, I'm on the outside looking in. And it was just. In no other race is qualifying 30th, 31st, 32nd that dramatic. And that's what I love about the fact we have 35 this year is because we're going to get something, you know, later this afternoon where it's like how did this happen? Why did this happen? Who's going to be screwed? Who's going to make something happen that had no business happening that we're going to be talking about for years? So, you know, I've had coffee with Lloyd a few times, and, you know, I flash back. I'm like, yeah, you finished fourth in the race year before, but I remember when you qualified that sucker 31st the next year. It was like, that was that good.
That is so true. Some of the best runs or driving that some of these drivers have done is sticking some box in the show right on the last day. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because we were standing probably mere feet apart, because I was down by Buddy Lazier, and you could see Dominguez was trying everything, and you knew it wasn't going to end well. You know, it was just either going to make it or hang it on the wall. And you're thinking, he's not hanging on the wall. And that's exactly what he did. And yeah, I mean, the you can just feel the tension and all the highs and the lows of emotion on pit road. It's amazing to be there live. It's not really a favorite memory, but it was a funny memory, is when the Tony Stewart AJ Foyt kerfuffle with if he was going to qualify that Conseco car. And I mean, there was times where, you know, looks like he might, but you kept on saying to yourself, no, he's a Chevy driver and it's a Toyota. That ain't going to work. And it never did work. It would have been a lot of fun seeing him try and qualify that car. But my first memory is when I'm 7 years old, and I knew qualifying was happening. And this is when I really started to understand racing and that. And it's 1973, and I come up out of my bedroom or somewhere, and my mom is kind of crying, and I'm going like, what's wrong? And she goes, oh, Art Pollard was killed. And I didn't really know who Art Pollard was, but they knew, they had, you know, they weren't close friends with him, but they shared a few beers with him, and he was killed that morning on pole day in 73 in a real grisly accident. And it was like, wow, yeah, that was kind of the start of it too, of you know, Indy. It just got worse from there. And that was the first time I ever seen my mom cry up from something outside of the family type thing, you know. And it's like, wow, this is kind of a rough deal here. And so, yeah, it was from there on, it was like, I kind of hardened me up real quick, you know, when it comes to racing. But yeah, qualifying at Indy is certainly special. And I remember 1992 was really special when Gary Bettenhausen to break the track record. That was really exciting. And then I think it was Crawford. Crawford, I think, was one of the guys. Yeah. And then eventually it was Guerrero. Ended up with the pole. And it was that was a crazy year too. A lot of stuff happening, but I was so happy when Gary Bettenhausen broke the record. I didn't think he was going to keep the pole. I'm thinking, well, as long as he's on the front row, and darn it, he ended up qualifying fourth. So he didn't make the front row, but yeah, that was a pretty cool deal.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I was only a handful of years old at that point, you know, 2, 3 and in 92. But I remember I have a VHS tape of that year's race. And I don't know if we ever converted it to a DVD, but, it's online now. Everyone can look back on it. I mean, that year, between the pole day stuff, the bump day stuff, I mean, I think I was 10 past Indy 500 winners in that field. Mears, Foyt, and Al Unser all had their only opportunity that they wound up going for their fifth win, as opposed to just the four. Then you had a rookie class that included, PT, Jimmy Vassar, Lynn St. James, and a bunch of guys that, did one or two races in their careers. What a story, right? Goodyear, didn't even make the race, and he wound up in a backup car and, getting within four or five hundredths and comes up short to Al Jr. So, 92 is definitely one of the all-timers, even for, the tens of thousands of crashes that happened that race.
True story. First time I met Jimmy Vassar, I forget where we met him, And I wasn't a credentialed media person there. That was my last year. I wasn't credentialed down there. And I'm down there with a bunch of guys, and there's a lot of drinking going on, I will admit. And we see Jimmy Vassar. He was signing stuff. I don't know if this was at like the Kroger or something, but I know one of my buddies said, "Hey, break a leg." And, well, he went out there and, yep, during the race, broke a leg. So, yeah, you can say that to actors, but don't say that to race car drivers, especially in the 1990s. Yeah, especially in the 90s. So, well, yep, Tony, sure. We certainly appreciate you joining us, and give us a quick prediction, poll winner.
A friend of mine and I have a preseason pool where we pick our winners, and then we pick the poll winner for Indy. So I picked Ed Carpenter as my poll winner preseason, so I'm going to stick with that.
That's a good pick, Ed Carpenter. I will go with Rossi, and we'll give Jeff Danica.
Yeah,
very good. I like that.
I'll take Will Power.
Okay.
Ooh, Will Power.
Yeah, it is.
Well, we'll see.
I still say Danica's better. We'll give Eddie Danica. How's that?
Yeah, that we can work with.
All right. Tony, I'll see you down there in a few days, and looking forward to a fun weekend.
Should be good, Z-Man. Take care, man.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. That's Tony DeZino joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, and we'll have more Final Inspection coming up after this.
Welcome back to the Final Inspection. 105.7 FM, The Fan, Dennis Michelson, Laurie Monroe from racetalkradio.com. That means it's time to go in-depth with your NASCAR talk. And Laurie Monroe, Saturday night, Kansas Speedway, and Kevin Harvick again getting the win.
Is there any doubt? I think this guy's just going to win every race for the rest of the year from the look of it.
How can one Ford team be so dominant in the era where all the cars are supposed to be so equal?
Well, obviously Ford has an advantage. Everybody knows that. But then you've got another advantage of having Kevin Harvick at the wheel. So you've got the double whammy. So look out, everybody.
Here's the scary part. Is Harvick's been able to do this despite his pit crew operating about 80% mm-hmm. like they always do? Could you imagine if they ever can finish pit stops and get them all right? This guy would never lose again.
Well, they could work on that and just keep going. Like, where is it going to end? The problem that I find here, and that really frustrates the hell out of me, is the fact that Kevin Harvick can go out there and win all these races. What is he on? Race number 5 or something? And then this stupid chase playoffs, whatever reset formula comes along, and say they sort of have a bit of a sputter in their step towards the end of the year, and basically erases all of the good that they've done. Again, another issue I have with NASCAR. So I don't know. The whole NASCAR thing, and I think we talked about it last week, this whole sale thing of NASCAR, it just looks like they're not even serious about it, and they start changing things. So again, you've got the guy who should be consistent and go out there, win, accumulate all these points, all that is wonderful. And then by some weird stroke of bad luck, ends up not getting the championship because of something stupid.
We keep hearing the rumors about the sale of NASCAR. And when I first heard this, I thought, well, this is some sort of a ploy to get a value on the sport for some other reason. I really didn't think it was serious that they'd be selling. But the more I think about it, and the more I think about that name Goldman Sachs being involved, the more I think it's really real that we're going to see it sold. If we do see NASCAR sold to another entity, is that possible that we could undo all the crap that we don't like in NASCAR and get back to the best racing on the planet?
It just depends who that entity is. And if that entity is somebody who actually understands racing, stock car racing, the history of the sport and all that. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens if it does happen.
One thing that I have found very interesting this year is we've seen sort of all the people within the sport sort of neutered over the last 5 years or so, where they're very reluctant to speak ill of the sport in any way. And once again, this past week with Cole Pern and the 78 team bringing a big saw out to make some adjustments there after a crash damage to get the car back on the track. And NASCAR saying now, no, only battery-operated things can be used. Cole Pern lit them up on Twitter. I'm really amazed at how outspoken some of the people within NASCAR have gotten over all these rules that keep being put in place.
It's about time. There's got to be a tipping point here. That whole deal with that huge cutoff saw, I think, is just, you know, where is it going to end? I don't understand NASCAR having to have control over every single wrench that's being used at the racetrack. And that big cutoff saw, I don't know. It's something that every junkyard has. It's something that gets the job done. But oh no, NASCAR has to speak up, can't use it. They're going to have solar-operated junk next out there, I'm sure.
It's something we've seen at NASCAR races forever. It wasn't like it wasn't like this was something new that a team invented. It's so funny, the things that NASCAR picks to enforce and the stuff that they don't enforce, it's just, I kind of wonder who's in charge right now.
Well, it gets back to my point. I think I said last week as well. It's just like they're not serious. They're not serious about what's going on. They just they tweak this a little bit and, well, maybe that didn't solve the problem. We'll just tweak this a little bit. Now they're just sort of willy-nilly. Well, you can't use that. If you bring an orange saw, you can't use an orange saw. It has to be official NASCAR colors. And it's just crazy.
Yeah, if it had been Monster Energy Green, I think they wouldn't have gotten the penalty.
Probably.
Unbelievable. But again, NASCAR tweaking a rule because the team's figuring out that, hey, if I don't make it through pre-qualifying inspection and I have to start from the rear, I get to start on brand new tires. So NASCAR has now changed that rule. Now everybody starts the race on brand new tires. It is so funny to watch these NASCAR crew chiefs constantly outsmarting NASCAR.
I must be stupid because this whole deal of starting at the back, you've missed qualifying, so you've got these fresh tires. Who cares at the start of a race? Don't you want fresh tires towards the end of a race? This is what I don't get. Why is that such a big advantage? And I understand probably one or two tracks, it might make some certain percentage of a difference. But to me, it's nothing that anybody should be getting all crazy about, because to me, the start of a race, you got fresh tires, but you're at the back of the pack. So what?
It's a 400-mile race, for criminy sakes. It's not a sprint.
Very strange.
Very weird. Also, NASCAR vowing to get tougher on the rules, as if they can get any tougher, because yet another rear window collapse, this time on Kyle Larson's car.
Yeah, I'm sure death penalties coming around the corner for whatever happens next. You know, they say time and time again, oh, the next round of penalties will be very severe, and then nothing really happens. You know, it's just sort of like raising kids, I suppose. It's just, don't do this, Billy, and you never discipline the kid, so he just keeps going. This is what NASCAR's done, and I truly don't know what the next step is. I guess you just send everybody home, to the point where NASCAR probably would love to send everybody home and not even have a sport to have to worry about, because that seems to be the route that they're going. You know, we're gonna obliterate all of our stars because we say so. Well, that's the reason that people are showing up to the track. The few that still are going is because they want to see their stars, their sports heroes. But NASCAR, again, is still going back to the old adage that you need the sport more than the sport needs you. Well, that's certainly changed.
Well, folks, it is time to take a quick break. We'll be back with more NASCAR talk. You're listening to The Final Inspection, 105.7 FM, The Fan. Welcome back to The Final Inspection, 105.7 FM. Dennis and Lori on a Saturday afternoon talking NASCAR. Lori Monroe, before we get to the All-Star race, this is sort of the halfway point of the NASCAR season. Sort of, you know, a little early, but the same idea. We've got enough races under our belt now to know who is doing well, who is doing poorly. Obviously, Kevin Harvick owning this 2018 season. But who is the biggest surprise to you this season?
Well, the surprises, in my opinion, are not good surprises. The one good surprise, I would say, probably would be Eric Almirola. But I expected him to do pretty darn good in that 10 car. What is surprising me are the guys who aren't having what I would say exceptionally good years. You know, you've got Chase Elliott once again not getting a win and just really not doing much. Then again, all of Chevrolet is having issues. All of Hendrick is having issues. So, you know, it's just unfortunate for them. But if you want to say just one bright spot would have to be Eric Almirola, I'd say.
Who's the biggest disappointment for the 2018 season so far?
The biggest disappointment? Gosh, I don't know. I probably because the expectation was so high, and that would be Chase Elliott, because everybody assumed he'd win. They had all these statistics out there. Well, his father finished second 8 times before he got his win, and then they start pumping that up. It's again, they're following that same bad script that came along with Dale Sr. and Dale Jr. All these sons have to mirror or exceed what their father did. And that's just so unrealistic. And again, you're seeing that placed upon Chase Elliott. I almost don't feel it as much this year as I did last year, of course, but the hype around him being in the 9, that has sort of faded away too. So hopefully they're giving the kid some space and let him just develop on his own pace. It's just been a little bit crazy with him, I think.
I've been a little surprised how good Ford has been this year, because they were doing a good job of whining before the season that they were, you know, second to the Toyota teams and all this. And my biggest disappointment this year has been Hendrick Motorsports. I just have not believed how bad the whole team has been, you know, relative to where you expect them to be year in and year out.
Well, the loss of Jeff Gordon behind the wheel, and then Dale Jr., and then bringing in these young kids. You know, you've got Byron, which, you know, still should be running Xfinity, in my opinion. It just doesn't seem as strong driver-wise as they have been in the last, how long? Last 2 decades, so I guess it stands to reason. It's like they're almost growing. They're just like in a growing phase right now, or at a standstill, maybe.
The other big surprise for me this year has been the lack of caution flags throughout the race. We saw it again. We saw it again at Kansas, where it was just about the only cautions early on were for the end of the stages.
Well, we don't need all these fake cautions anymore. We don't need the debris cautions that everybody was screaming about, because we have all these stages now. So they don't have to have these fabricated cautions. That just sort of tells you how many were.
But guys used to lean on each other and cause wrecks back in the day. And while you didn't, you know, necessarily tune in to watch the wrecks, you did like the hard racing. We're not really seeing the hard racing lead to any cautions lately.
Well, I'd like to really get in touch with a statistician, because I truly believe that these fake debris cautions really outnumbered legitimate, hard, yeah, you know, door-to-door banging wrecks as cautions. I really think that.
Now we turn our sights to the fun race of the year. This has always been the race that I said, if you're introducing somebody to NASCAR, get them to watch the old Winston. That was the race to get somebody hooked, because it was just all exciting right from the beginning. This year for the All-Star Race, all kinds of new rules. Listening to Kevin Harvick talk about this on Happy Hours this week, nobody understands what these rules are going to do for the racing.
Does it really matter for this race, though? All it is entertainment. this is all we really have with the All-Star race. It just comes down to just pure entertainment. So, you know, sit down, have your popcorn, and as a driver, just go out there and turn some laps. Maybe they're going to hand out flyers before the race and let everybody know.
2 45-minute practices are all these guys will get a chance of having these cars on the track because there's no open testing. They've taken the cars to the wind tunnel, but that only tells you so much. They can only do so much with computer programming. So with such a lack of preparation time for this race, I'm not so sure anybody understands how these cars are going to race. Does that affect who you would pick for the big race this evening?
Not really, because I kind of feel a lot of this year's been very unpredictable anyway, to a certain degree. And, you know, this whole deal about these guys not really knowing what's going to happen, isn't that, again, come back to what NASCAR wants? They want everybody sort of having to think on their feet and not really know and all that. And they're probably going to, you know, if we had Humpy Wheeler, he'd probably invert the field. NASCAR wants everybody to show up sort of not knowing what's going to happen and just throw the dice and let her go.
It's going to be mayhem. Nobody's going to learn a single thing for how these cars are going to handle on the Charlotte track for the 600. So that goes away. All there is to win this thing. Laurie Monroe, who is your pick to win the 2018 All-Star Race?
Ryan Blaney.
Ryan Blaney is a solid, solid pick. I'm not going to go out on the limb. I'm going to take a guy who's really good in these short segment type races. I am going to take Mr. Kyle Busch. Well, folks, that is going to wrap it up for the NASCAR segment. You're listening to the Final Inspection, 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Thank you, Dennis and Lori. I want to thank everybody who tuned in today to the Final Inspection show. And I also want to thank the guests, Steve St. Clair. He put together the fantastic show tonight out at Plymouth Dirt Track Racing. It's in the Sheboygan County Fairgrounds. Cars on-track action starts at 5:30 p.m. tonight. It's $28 to get in the door. If you bring your kids, they are only $6. Bring your family out there. Tony Stewart, Rico Abreu, Dave Blaney, and a lot more. It's going to be a fantastic show out at Plymouth Dirt Track Racing in the Sheboygan County Fairgrounds. Head out there tonight. I will be out there. You see me. Say hi. Let's have a beer. You got the All-Star Race tonight. NASCAR. Like I said, we'll see how this goes with them running the restrictor plates at Charlotte. I hope this race turns out a lot better than what I'm thinking it's going to be. But, you know, like I said, hopefully it works out fantastic and it's thrilling and there's a lot of action. We shall see. You've got bump day continuing to go on now. Hopefully the weather holds off and they can sit there and get that in and everything like that. We'll know who is on the pole for the Indy 500 tomorrow. And good luck. I've got Will Power. Steve went with Tony Kanaan. So we shall see. We shall see. But we're, you know, getting closer to the Indy 500. Just fantastic. So obviously thank you to Steve Zocchi being a guest on his own show yet again for down in his palatial estate in Indianapolis. The guy lives down there in the month of May. So, you know, and I know he's busy and with the track and all that. So thank him for joining us. Dennis Michelson, Laurie Monroe from Race Talk Radio. Fantastic NASCAR coverage, like always. That's it, Milwaukee. Thank you to Great Lakes Dragway. Head down there. They're obviously in Union Grove. Fantastic food. Bring the family down there too. It's great for the whole family. And David Hobbs Honda, go get yourself a new Honda. Fantastic sales going on all weekend long. Thank you guys. We'll see you next week. Final Inspection show noon to 2 next Saturday. Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
They can't be seen with me, and I'm feeling real strong. We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.